It is a very special treat for me to have in here one person I admire tremendously, one person I just met who I like tremendously. Ann Burke is the former. Kevin Magnuson is the latter. They're both here to talk about the 50th anniversary of Special Olympics. Hi.
Hi. Good evening, Rick.
Hi, Rick.
There is, even though it's a rival newspaper, an amazing special section in today's, meaning Sunday's Sun-Times. I assume it's online somehow, but it is much better if you go out and buy the paper because it really is a handsome 10-page section that really gives you the measure of the Special Olympics. Ann Burke, this was your idea. You were a young, beautiful P.E. teacher, Southsider, born and bred, P.E. teacher at the Park District, and you got an idea to have a competition. That is sort of simply put.
Yes, Rick, that's exactly right. It was simply put. But the idea really, we all know that the Greeks began competition with athletes. So the idea of having children who had special needs participate in track and field and softball and baseball and all that really was not a difficult thing. Being a phys ed teacher at the Chicago Park District since early 1965 and growing up in the parks in Chicago, sure. That's what I did. And I remember back to Sister Henrietta, she said, only do what you love to do. She said, what do you love to do? And I said, I love track and field, twirl my baton, tap dance, swim, and all that. She said, then you should be a gym teacher. So that's exactly what I've done my whole life, what I love to do. But working with kids with disabilities and teaching them a skill was amazing to me because they wanted to learn, they wanted to run, they wanted to jump and play, but they just didn't have the skills, so we were made for each other.
One of the interesting things, because you and I, sorry, Kevin, I'll get to you in a second. Interesting things is you and I are roughly the same vintage in Chicago growing up, you on the south side, me on the north side. And one of the things about growing up in that era is often children with disabilities were not just shunned by other children. Occasionally, they were institutionalized to just move them away from the picture. Occasionally, in Chicago, people I knew in Old Town wrote obituaries, printed obituaries about the children so that no one would ever say, hey, whatever happened to little fake obituaries? And so we're talking about an era where they were just, talk about diminished. Was it a hard sell, and who did you go to first?
You're absolutely right about people in the... This is 1965 when I started working at the park, West Pullman, on the south side, is that where were the children? Well, they were either in a closet or they were in an institution.
Yeah.
There was no middle ground. And so I had to advertise in the local Roseland newspapers if you had a child with... Well, we're not using the R word.
Yeah, sure.
People with disabilities, bring them to the park. We have a program for you now. And this is in 1965. So it was word of mouth from one mom to another who admitted that they had a child, number one. And it was a learning process. So that's why in this very short time, 50 years, major change has occurred, not only in America with regard to people with disabilities. I mean, in 65, there was no special education.
No
special recreation, no ADA, nothing. So these parents had no hope. It was all based on hope. Once they saw their child able to do something, to play floor hockey, to swim, to do anything, gave them hope. And so today, celebrating 50 years later, it's worldwide for hope for people with disabilities, jobs, living in the community.
One thing, Kevin Magnuson, you have been involved in Special Olympics for now 14 years. You're the outgoing president.
I am.
But you'll always be on the board, will you?
Correct.
Knowing that, and I know you know the history, the deep history of the Special Olympics, that has got to enrich the experience of being involved, doesn't it? There is no personal reason other than that for your initial involvement, is there?
No, exactly. And I tell this story often because it's the reason why I'm involved with Special Olympics was because of my dad, Keith Magnuson, the former Blackhawk, who was taken to actually the third games ever by Stan Mikita. who's Dan Makita and George Armstrong from the Maple Leafs, were at the first games and teaching floor hockey, and they're supporters. But my dad was a rookie in 69-70, and then in 1970 in the spring, Stan Makita grabbed my dad and Cliff Coral and said, "We're going somewhere." My dad and Cliff Coral thought they were going to have lunch and some beers. Well, they
yes,
were going to.
Those are hockey players.
Right, right.
That's
exactly
what
they did back then. But they ended up going to Soldier Field and the Special Olympics. And my dad, from that day forward, was totally hooked because of the hope that he saw in the athletes' eyes and the hope in the athletes' parents' eyes families.
Yeah.
He just saw the happiness and the true. I mean, there's nothing more pure than that happiness, and so it stuck with him. And when I, many years later, when he would come home from a Special Olympics event, my dad naturally was a very happy man. But I knew, my sister and I knew, when he came home from a Special Olympics event, because he was that much more enlightened, gave us an extra squeeze. And just felt blessed that we were healthy, but just felt blessed that he had that day with the athletes. And it wasn't just one day a year. He was very involved otherwise, but the one day where he was at the competitions and out there, hands-on with the boys and girls, he just absolutely loved
it. You and your sister weren't bad kids, and ask him on those days to increase your allowance, did you? Seems like it would have been the perfect point.
Yeah, we weren't that
to that smart. To that point, Kevin Magnuson, and Ann Burke remembers this name. I was dating a girl named Margie Schaller in 1968, high school sweetheart stuff, and her father, Leonard Schaller, was one of the benefactors of one of the initial and big benefactors of the first Special Olympics here. And I remember he used to give us great seats to football games and he had great seats to everything Mr. Schaller did. And I'll never forget that day. You go to Soldier Field today, there's a bad imitation of him, and go see this as a special thing. Just called it a special thing going on down there. And we did go, and it was a revelation. It literally changed my attitude. I was a 17-year-old, football jock. It changed my attitude for keeps. We will explore further the meaning of the Special Olympics with Ann Burke and Kevin Magnuson. It's the 50th anniversary. You can go to specialolympics.org and find a ton of stuff. We got a break for a little 2 seconds. I'll tell you, amazing sports memorabilia, just one problem. It's all fake. Wow, that Keith Magnuson jersey is not real. How the FBI cracked a $20 million con. WGN-TV investigates Monday at 9. We'll be right back.
Yeah, I gotta go to work.
Michael McDermott is who you're listening to from his Out From Under CD. I'm Rick Kogan. The show is After Hours, and this year, from July 17th until the 21st, there are all manner of events, justifiably celebrating the 50th anniversary of Special Olympics. Kevin Magnuson, the outgoing president and board member for life, is in here. Ann Burke, whose idea it was to found a Special Olympics Games in Chicago with the help of Mayor Daley, of course, Dan Shannon, and the head of the Park District, and Mrs. Shriver. You flew, if I'm not mistaken, you needed to buy a new dress to go see Mrs. Shriver in Washington, D.C. to pitch this idea. Is that right, Anna, or is that apocryphal? Because I love that story.
No, it's absolutely true. What happened was this Dr. William Freeberg from Southern Illinois University used to be an executive director of the Kennedy Foundation. I reached out to him to consult with him, and he said, you should write a letter to Mrs. Shriver to see if they can help fund this your first City of Chicago track meet at Soldier Field. So I wrote the letter, and she wrote back and said, yes, I want you to come out here and talk to me. So went out there. I was a wreck, of course.
Of course.
President Kennedy's sister. I mean, my goodness.
Who did you go with?
Steve Kelly, Mayor Kelly's son.
Oh, wow.
He was the head of public relations for the Chicago Park District at the time. Obviously, so we were there, and Mrs. Shriver said, this will not work. This will not work because it's only Chicago. If you make it national, rewrite your proposal. If you make it national, then I'll consider it. So immediately, I called Dr. Freeberg. He said, make it national, she'll fund it. $25,000 came. was announced in March of 1968 in Mayor Daley's office with Bill McFetridge and Mrs. Shriver there, and we were off and running for our first games.
What was, now you remind me from your perspective, actually, Keith Magnuson, do you remember the first Special Olympics that you ever saw?
I remember going to my dad taking me and my sister.
Pretty early on.
Yeah, like 9, 10 years old. So that was my first memory of seeing the athletes, you know, perform the track and field events. My mom was there as well, so it was a family.
One of the things about it, I mean, now in this era of sports center nonsense, what I recall about the Special Olympics was that it was very wonderfully competitive. Nobody looked that different than somebody else because we weren't, you know, assaulted by images of, you know, Tiger Woods and the world's fastest man and all these other athletes that were bombarded with. There was just a joy in the competition. Don't you both? Am I romanticizing this or not?
No, it's just the way it was. I mean, you have a group of people who never played out in the park. They never played in the front of their house. They didn't learn to play ball or kick a ball or throw a ball or jump. And many of the children had physical disabilities as well. So once they learned the skill, they realized that they actually could do something. So if they learned to jump from 2 inches to 12 inches,
sure.
I mean, that was major. And so a 50-yard dash, you know, a football throw, a softball throw, a soccer throw, even jumping on a trampoline, anything that they did was a skill they learned that they never could have done before. So this was all new. So everybody was excited about it. And to watch a parent watch their child throw the ball when they thought their child could do nothing and were told by doctors, this child's never going to be anything. Put them in an institution.
No, that's exactly right.
Put them away. And now we have people that are working today in society. They have accomplished things. They go to school now, and they learn skills. They can work in workshops, and they still have a lot of fun and enjoy life.
Well, I remember, too, of that era, a place called, before there was a Lamb's Farm, there was a Lamb's Pet Store on State Street where we bought our first dog because my mother said, you have to go to this store. They have kids about your age working there. They're not like you, but they work there. And that was our exposure to it, too. And it just, you know, it's kind of an amazing thing that in 50 years we've become, in some ways we've become a worse country. But in this one way, we've become such a better place. What I remember, and Keith, you can talk to this because you were a competitive athlete. The thing about it, what I recall every time I've been there, is there is such a nurturing element to, you know, the athletes themselves. Yeah, of course, somebody wins, but the joy that is shared by someone who comes in fourth, the winner, I have seen more beautiful kind of hugs during the Special Olympics than I will ever see in any professional sport. You toyed with the...
For sure. So, I mean, I played, you know, collegiate hockey and a couple of years of minor pro, and the competitive juices definitely run through my body, and they were passed on from my father to me. So, you know, seeing these athletes perform at the levels that they do is amazing. And whether, like you said, win or lose, there's a hug. There are cheering, kisses, and, you know, just a ton of support. So it's so endearing to watch, and, you know, just really pushes each of the athletes to do better. And sure, everyone wants to get first place, but they're just happy there to compete. And the parents are happy to see them compete and have a, you know, something drive them every day to get better in the long jump or the softball throw or whatever the competition is. It's an amazing thing.
Another thing about it is I have been there with no disabled people in my immediate family or life and have met a few other people over the years who have gone out of curiosity, who are not intimately or familial tied to the thing. I think the experience for those kind of people, which is why I'm telling you people, you don't need to know somebody who's competing to partake of these Special Olympics, that you will be rewarded in ways that I can't calculate because I don't know you, but in ways that I was rewarded. Don't you think the crowd generally, Anne, is people who know something about Special Olympics. I would like to see people walk in who barely know what it is and participate in a day, don't you think?
They do. It's really kind of interesting over the 50 years, especially the kids, if you think back to 65 and 68,
yeah.
Coming to a public park was a major barrier.
Oh, my gosh.
Because
sure.
everyone was afraid that the kids were going to be bullied.
Yeah.
And we all think that. You know, kids are kind of mean to each other. However, because the kids at the park who went to the regular programs and everything were team leaders for my program. They became buddies, became mentors for the kids. I couldn't have had a program at West Pullman Park without helpers with the regular program. So those kids were the buddies. And our focus now, and it has been for 50 years in Chicago Park District, but I think worldwide now, is inclusion.
Oh.
Making sure that the kids at Park Ridge High School are working with the kids that are in the special needs class.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have unified sports where kids who have a disability, or we should say differences,
right.
as opposed to those who don't have differences, are on one team. There's going to be a World Hockey Unified Soccer game at our 50th anniversary. Right now, people from 25 countries around the world have been competing since springtime to win a place to come to Chicago for the World Cup Unified Soccer match.
Oh, great.
That is amazing. To have kids working together, playing together, and that is the best of all worlds, where we all should be working together, playing together, because we have differences. It doesn't make any difference.
Well, I think the other thing before we take a commercial break, and you two are coming back after the news to really hit hard all of this stuff going on, Kevin Magnuson and Ann Burke, one of the great things, too, is for kids who are from Northbrook and Lake Forest to meet kids who are from West Pullman and Englewood and Bridgeport and Lawndale. They will see that we are more similar than dissimilar. We got to take a commercial, then we got to get some news. And I will be back with Ann Burke and Kevin Magnuson. Maybe Cochran could do a dual most valuable person on the planet and have Ann Burke and Kevin Magnuson win whatever one can win by that, because they are among the powers behind the 50th anniversary celebration of Special Olympics, which takes place with a lot of events, doesn't it? Kevin, tell me some of the events that are coming up. It all starts on the 17th of July.
It does. Justice Burke just alluded to the Unified Football Cup that starts on July 17th at the CIBC Fire Pitch. So from July 17th to the 19th, 25 countries are going to be...
Wow.
It's unbelievable. 25 countries are going to be playing unified soccer. So it's athletes with special needs and athletes without special needs playing together in football matches, which are just going to be fantastic to watch.
And that's, it does sound fantastic.
Yeah, and so that's going to be the round robin of the 25 different countries. And then the men's and women's finals are going to take place on July 20th, starting at 5 p.m. at Toyota Park. And it's you know, really important that we have support. We'd love to fill the stands because we have a very special opportunity. Both the men's and women's finals are going to be aired live on ESPN2.
Oh, fantastic.
So first time ever any Special Olympics events will be aired
Is
live.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, people, you should come out just for that. You
Free
can be on
charge.
TV. You can be on TV.
And that takes place, so that switches venues. Just want to make that
sure.
clear. Toyota Park on July 20th at 5 p.m. We're looking to fill the stands with as many people as possible. As Justice Burke remembers, the first games, mm-hmm. About 1,000 athletes attended. And,
yeah.
and if you look at the old pictures, very little people were in the stands. Empty stands.
Margie Schaller and Rick Kogan were there.
Right, there's yeah. two that we know. now, and you know, the fact that there's over 5.5 million athletes globally.
That is so wonderful to hear.
We would love to fill the stands at Toyota Park July 20th. So that's a huge goal of ours.
Then there's the, what is the law enforcement torch run and dedication of the Eternal Flame? That sounds like a ball.
It really will be. So the law enforcement torch run is something that takes place in every single state in the United States. And over the last 50 years, they've raised over, catch this, $400 million for Special Olympics.
That's fantastic.
And that is the local police department. I'll let Justice Burke explain a little bit more.
Local police departments all over the state of Illinois carry the torch around the state raising funds. And so on the day for lighting the eternal flame, law enforcement will bring the torch into Soldier Field. They're going to be running from 39th Street, Lakeshore Drive, into the south end of Soldier Field, through Soldier Field, to come out to McFetridge Boulevard and light the eternal flame that has been designed by our Chicago-owned Richard Hunt.
You're having a concert, too, are you not?
Yes, we are.
And once again, I've got to tell you people that if you pick up the Sun-Times today, Sunday, I know it's a rival newspaper. They do have a 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12-page special section that charts the history of the Special Olympics, but also gives you all sorts of information. Now, Chance the Rapper that is scheduled, is he not?
He is. Chance the Rapper has stepped up to not only perform, but produce the concert.
That's a big step up.
It is. And he's never produced a concert before. So
the newly engaged Chance the Rapper.
He's got a lot of stuff going on in his life, and he's made Special Olympics a major priority and has asked many of his musician friends and celebrity friends to show up in a great way for our athletes and our organization on July 21st at Northerly Island. So Chance Rapper presents through his company Social Function Productions. So Chance is headlining. We have Usher, Smokey Robinson, OAR, Jason Mraz.
See, some of these names at my advanced age, I go, who? I do know Chance. I do know Usher. I certainly know who Smokey Robinson is. These others, I'm sure they are big stars and deservedly so. In your 14 years of involvement, Kevin, and even Kevin Magnuson, even further than that, and you and Burke for starting this very thing, the Special Olympics, do you ever... you two ever get a chance to just like sit back and allow yourselves to be stunned at the growth of this thing? Do you ever get that chance? You both seem so busy just doing it and moving it forward. Perhaps this 50th anniversary would be a time for you to do that after it's all over, of course.
Well, the first time I really felt that it hit home to me was sitting in Shanghai for the Special Olympic International Games when 8,000 Olympians came to the stadium and watching the president of China and realizing that we were in a third world country. And it wasn't that long ago that people in third world countries did not even accept the fact there was anybody with a disability, let alone celebrating.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Let alone celebrating. That really hit home is like, oh my gosh, this is all the way from Chicago, South Side, downtown, Soldier Field. But it's a movement that really is a movement of heart, and it's a movement of what we need to be as humans, as a society.
Yeah.
It is something we should care about with each other, that everybody has differences. I don't care if you have the spectrum of difference that is huge and catastrophic, to a little difference.
Yeah.
And we need to help each other to work with each other so they can be contributing members of society.
But to understand, I mean, that's the thing.
The stigma of what it was to have a disability is erased for people with special needs.
Yeah.
There is no question about it, and it really has taken a movement across the world. And I think that it's normal to have special needs now in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you say that any better? But it's just one of those things. Everybody knows about Special Olympics. But the next step with a person with any kind of a difference is quality of life. Are we providing long-term residential care? Are we providing good education for them? Opportunities to learn skills so they can get a job? Because everybody needs to be part of a society that accepts them and can participate. So it's our responsibility to teach them that. And I think we have a lot more to do. Special Olympics is one thing, but Special Olympics has made that a priority. going to the forward.
Well, I don't know if you've ever thought of running for president, but after that delightful talk, I think you should think about it. I know it'll be too much. It's too much politics in one family. 68 was an amazing year for you, Justice Ann Burke. In January, you flew to Washington and convinced Mrs. Kennedy to help start this whole thing with the help of Leonard Schaller in Chicago. Then in May, you got married. You got married for the long term. He was then a cop, right?
Yes.
He was then a police officer. Then he became an alderman, and he's the longest-serving alderman in the history of Chicago, 14th Ward Alderman Ed Burke, who is the dutiful husband just sitting back there and not coming in. And, you know, you think about politicians, and you think, oh, my God, they see a microphone, they go nuts. He's being really, really good.
It was order of court.
Hey, Kevin, it's really a pleasure to meet you, and you know, all the work you're doing for this is it's just a great cause. How old's your kid?
So I have a 3.5-year-old little boy, Gunner.
When will you introduce Gunner to the Special Olympics?
Well, it's funny you say that. He was at Soldier Field today. We had a table at Soldier Field for Sport Fest, and we were promoting the 50th anniversary, and he was handing out pins like a little champion, and he was saying Special Olympics and just going up and saying Special Olympics and handing the pins to other athletes, and it was just heartwarming, and it's going to be in his blood the rest of his life as well.
Good, so you're passing down really something. Thank the two of you so much, and great success on this. Go to specialolympics.org for all sorts of information, or pick up your Sun Times today in a 12-page special section that tells you just about all you need to know. And you must be pleased by this section.
I'm
you too,
thrilled.
Kevin.
It's a wonderful
when this
piece.
Is, you it's think something's piece. Around, and we all know Chicago, something's around for a long time, sometimes tends to be taken for granted. And it's great to get this kind of recognition. So onward, as they say.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you both so much. We'll take a little break and drag in here Mark and Maureen Shulman to talk about Taste of Chicago. And they do a ton. I'm surprised there isn't a... Maybe there is. And if there's not, there will be a Special Olympics cake in the shape of the young Rick Kogan when he was first there, sitting in the crowd with Mr. Schaller's tickets.